Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:24 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is September 1st, and copper was down heavily in here today, so breaking back below the 350 area, and this is very clearly resistance in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So this has been a really profound decline and a massive top formation completion. And a very dynamic move this week as it pulls back from the region of the secular trend. So this continues to look like a failed upside break and then a completing type 2 top formation, where we have a really exceptionally swift advance, loss of uptrend consistency, lengthier range, wedging. Characteristic failed upside break, massive reaction against the prevailing trend, period of right-hand extension, and then subsequently a big decline. And now we're well inside the previous peaks and pulling back. Now the secular trend is most useful when there is a trend. So therefore, the fact that the price is back below the 1,000-day moving average. Well, that does call into question whether this is in fact a secular trend. So, obviously, there are two major competing forces here. One is the fact that China represents the majority of demand. So, what happens in China has a significant knock-on effect for what happens in copper. And I think that's well understood by most people. But then we have the bullish argument, which is this huge promise of massive demand coming from the electric vehicle sector. So, first is that the massive increase in electric vehicle supply is not today, but the slowdown in China is today. So, that's the main reason why we have contracting prices. So obviously that's something that's very much tied to what happens in China. And I do think that this big argument about whether we're going to have a longer term inflationary issue, whether we're in a new secular trend of bond prices coming down and yields rising, and therefore valuations contracting overall, all of that hinges very much on what China's next steps are. The renminbi is trending down versus the dollar. So the dollar's trending higher against it. That's what we have here on the chart. And it was mildly stronger yesterday and then a little weaker in here today. But definitely the trend is intact. So China is slowly but surely devaluing the currency. And that's also aimed at providing some assistance to the infrastructure and residential homes sector. But the renminbi is not accelerating lower, and therefore we can conclude that the quantity of liquidity being made available to the wider economy is still reasonably modest. And that's continuing to weigh on the economy. Now, you can't make a judgment about what's happening in China without incorporating a political perspective. And arguably, many of the rest of the markets in the world are going the same way, where you have increasing government intervention in markets. So, the big political event in China is the Party Congress in October. And that's where Xi Jinping is going to get leadership for at least the next 5 years, and from his perspective, potentially life. And obviously, that's a major political event, and they are not going to allow anything to get in the way of that. So, it's to be expected that with rising numbers of COVID cases in every province in China, the potential between now and the middle of October is that there will be a full lockdown of the economy. And they will ensure that there is zero chance of public protest at the thought of having Xi Jinping as leader for life. And that's weighing on sentiment in the commodities market because it represents a really significant downside shock for the wider Chinese economy. And I suspect that's what we're seeing now in the copper price. It's arguably what we're seeing also in the oil price. Oil prices have been down by several dollars a day for three consecutive days. Now, when we look at that on a weekly basis, this is a pretty dynamic move. And it's pulling back through the $100 area. So the jawboning by Saudi Arabia last week succeeded in only supporting the price for a week. Now we're seeing a significant drawdown down through the $100 level. This has been exceptionally choppy. And I think that when we had the pop above $100 earlier on this week, it was looking a lot better than it is right now. But now there's the potential that we're going to see it pushing down through this short-term range. Now, there's been exceptional enthusiasm surrounding oil and people talking about a new secular bull market and an acute shortage of supply. And that's all. My argument throughout the last few months has been that the vast majority of analysts don't pay attention to volatility on the demand side. The lazy way to analyze oil prices is to only look at supply. But we have to have a view on demand. Demand is not constant. And that's particularly true at major economic turning points, which is potentially what we're looking at. Now, when we think about the performance of stocks, the major indices in the USA finished in mildly positive territory today and unwound a more than 1% decline. And we have a short-term oversold condition, so potentially we're going to get a little bit of pause here. And not least because we're coming back into the region of the lows put in back in June. Then you have people like Jeremy Grantham talking about a super bubble that has yet to burst, and highlighting in clear terms that it is normal to have a 50% retracement of the initial decline. And the Nasdaq did that. It pulled back by 34% and then unwound 50% of that decline before rolling over once more. I rather think that we're going to have a good deal more rolling around here. But I had a conversation last night with some of my tennis buddies after playing, and I thought it was particularly interesting that this sort of polarity that we have in the economy, where you have someone who's an engineer in the technology sector who feels like all he's been doing for the last 2 years is re-engineering products to try and avoid using one component or another. And as soon as they've succeeded in engineering a new way of putting it together, then another component becomes unavailable and they have to start all over again. And that's a cost for the company. And then on top of that, the cost of the components has rocketed, where something used to cost 10 cents, it now costs $4. So when you're buying hundreds of thousands of them, those kinds of costs tend to add up rather quickly. Then you have the COO of a major marketing and PR firm saying that 2020 was their best year, 2021 was even better than that, and 2022 is going to be even better than 2021. So he's saying that there's absolutely no slowdown in the consumer sector. So this tells two different stories. But the most important of them is that we still have very abundant liquidity. And there's a lot of money still floating around. So the Federal Reserve has raised rates aggressively. And we have not yet seen the knock-on effects of that. The most important thing to remember is that raising interest rates, the effects are not immediately apparent in the market. It takes time. And that's potentially what we're looking at now. So we have a short-term oversold condition right now on the S&P. It's been down for consecutive weeks over the last 3 weeks. So we could get a little bit of steadier action. But monetary conditions continue to tighten. And the size of the Fed's balance sheet is going to accelerate lower from this month. So it's contracted a bit over the course of the last 3 months, but the pace of the contraction is going to double. And then, because both state, local, and federal coffers have been boosted by tax returns because of the booming economy, they haven't been drawing down, or the Fed has not been drawing down resources from, excuse me, the government has not been drawing down resources from the Fed. And that has helped to inflate the balance sheet. So, as the economy slows down, then the government will have to start drawing down from the Fed. Then, also, there is the potential that Social Security or pensions everywhere are going to take a significant jump higher in 2023 because they are index linked. So, we're going to have some shenanigans by governments to try and ensure that that does not, in fact, occur. And certainly, when I saw an article yesterday talking about energy companies in the UK having $170 billion or pounds in profits, well, that is a massive target for windfall taxes. What is interesting is that Petróleo Brasileiro has successfully been able to fend off those types of overtures. But it's an oil company, so if oil prices continue to contract, well, then that is going to have a knock-on effect for the price as well. But at least the dividend is still world-beating. Now, India was up in a dynamic manner yesterday, and it was down a little in here today. But we have outsized growth and inflation that's below both the UK and the USA. So this is something that's going to act as a really significant support overall. Of course, India needs infrastructure, and they would thrive in an environment where commodity prices come down. They've already benefited from the fact that they're buying their oil directly from Russia. And of course, we are going to see significant investment in the defense sector. Countries like Germany don't have the resources required to equip their own military. They're going to have to invest significantly in that sector. But this is a sector that's not immune from tighter liquidity conditions, and that's what we're looking at. And the 10-year yield continues to push higher. It was up another 6 basis points. Today we're up 2, 3 and a quarter. And as we look at this over the long term, this sustained move above 3% is a meaningful event. Now, somebody might highlight that this is looking like a head and shoulders, but when we think about it over the longer term, it looks more like a consolidation in the region of the upper side of the base formation. And if it is a head and shoulders, we'll see a big downward dynamic. It's really a question of, I think the big question is whether we're in a new inflationary cycle or whether we're going to see a recession start soon, and then there will be a significant deflation scare, which will create demand for bonds. But what we have seen over this year has been a very clear correlation between bonds and equities. They've both fallen together. And that correlation broke down in August, where bonds kept going down, but stocks didn't. And over the last 2 weeks, the correlation has reasserted. So we've had a pullback in commodities in the stock market and then also in the bond market. Then, when we think about the dollar, it was up in a dynamic manner in here today. So, touching the 110 level, breaking out of the short-term range, led higher by the weakness of the yen. So the yen is up to 140 and change, and the dollar is breaking out of this 6 week range. So this looks like a really consistent uptrend. And the euro is trading back below parity and in a pretty dynamic manner as well. So there's obviously some pricing in of the reluctance of European central banks to do and much more than jawbone their way around. And the pound is down to 115. So it has clearly broken through the 120 level, taken another step lower, and this is still a very consistent downtrend. In order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment, it's going to have to, at minimum, sustain a move up through 120. So this is a rather difficult environment because weak currencies and high commodity prices contribute to inflationary pressures. And at the other side of that equation, it's going to make European exports much more attractive. Ultimately, we're heading into significant recessions. Germany is very much of the opinion that Russia is going to turn off the gas in the winter. And Europe has been engaged in an heroic purchasing plan to try and fill up storage. And Germany has invested significantly in floating regasification units. They should have two up and running by the end of the winter, and between four and five ready to go for the winter of 2023. So that's obviously come at a significant cost, but Germany then will have import capacity for 25% of their needs through floating regasification units, and that's a serious victory. What it also implies is that this phenomenally large acceleration in gas prices has probably ended. Now, it does not mean that prices are going to collapse back to where they were pre-pandemic, but they're certainly not going to stay around 300. This has been a huge downward dynamic, and I think it is more likely than not that a reversion back towards the region of the 200-day moving average is the base case. There has been a clear conclusion that the world is going to starve, that Europe is going to freeze, and that there isn't that then there's going to have to be a massive mining boom to meet the demand for all of these electric vehicles. So these are really extreme predictions, and I don't believe that they're realizable. I think that Europe is not going to freeze this winter. Is it going to be comfortable? No. Are there going to be more people out of jobs? Yes. But are we going to have the rolling blackouts? I think that's not nearly as big a factor now as it was back in June. Yet news headlines continue to intensify. But this has been a really significant development in terms of securing supplies. Then let's just think about these food prices. Wheat is a major food commodity, and the price has contracted meaningfully. We're back now where prices were in 2012, and this is back inside the long-term range. So there's, I think, much less potential that we're going to have a really significant food crisis. Then the other really significant one is rough rice. And rough rice prices have been quite steady and they do continue to rise. And this is much more to do with drought conditions in Texas. But I can tell you firsthand that it's probably made an inch of rain in the last hour. And the drought conditions in Texas, where the majority of the USA's rice is grown, have reversed really quite considerably over the last 3 weeks. But nonetheless, these prices continue to rise. And this is much more meaningful for the global consumer than wheat is. So this is the thing to worry about in terms of the cost of food. Then palm oil prices have collapsed in value. The intervention of the Indonesian government in the market has been a very significant factor, and prices have almost halved. So we've had a lot of commodity prices coming down, and that suggests that grocery bills will start to contract. So some of the inflationary pressures are already peaking, but there have been several fires in factories, and this is something that's not going to be fixed by monetary policy. It just takes time to rebuild these factories. And we're seeing an investment cycle in the semiconductor sector today that's similar to what we had during Y2K. People really worried about access and about an inability to increase supply and worried about geopolitics. So there's fabs being built in every major economy in the world, and this is going to contribute to a massive swell of supply over the course of the next few years. And that's why the semiconductor sector has pulled back again into the region of the 1,000-day moving average. In order to clearly demonstrate that the bull trend is over and that the buy the dip strategy is no longer working, then these indices will have to sustain moves below their 1,000-day moving averages. We've certainly seen people willing to buy the dip when it first came back into the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Now we'll have to see whether that's still the case. We certainly had a little bit of steadier action in here today. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.